Okay, we're here with the Sensibility team. Who are you guys?
So I'm Ken Levy. I'm the program manager focused on community around our VS ecosystem team, also known as the VSX team.
Okay.
VSX stands for Visual Studio Extensibility.
Okay, and you are?
I'm Aaron Martin. I'm a developer on the Visual Studio ecosystem team, and we create the Visual Studio SDK.
Okay, cool. So there's been a lot of new things in Visual Studio 2008 for extensibility.
Yep.
In all sorts of areas. Why don't you give us the quick overview of what's possible for a Visual Studio extensibility?
Okay. So, for example, there's things like macros and even add-ins that are included with Visual Studio. I mean, you don't need anything external from Visual Studio Standard or above to create those things. There's a project type. You say, I want to create an add-in, and you just step through the wizard. It'll create you some template code, and you can hook an add-in. There's an object model you can access, and it'll do... A lot of it's automation-oriented or kind of enhancing or controlling the functionality around the IDE of Visual Studio. And then there's things called VS packages that are created with the Visual Studio SDK. Now, historically, only Microsoft in the beginning years ago extended Visual Studio for different products and stuff. And we had a partner program that was kind of exclusive in a sense. And then it grew, so now we have a couple of hundred partners in the VSIP program, VSIP standing for Visual Studio Industry Partners. It's a program, and basically people pay an annual fee, but they get marketing, they get technical benefits, business benefits, and that's usually for companies who are selling a commercial product that integrate with Visual Studio. But with VS 2005, we made the SDK free. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're working on aggressively now is growing the community of developers who are extending Visual Studio, that are building things with, some we're building with add-ins, but also around the VS SDK and integrating tightly, so that anything you buy that's a product for Visual Studio, when you see how did they replace the property sheet or add functionality, add right-click functionality here, or create their own source code editor, do something like a custom language with a compiler and tools and everything, color coding, IntelliSense, that's all done with the VS SDK. So our team works on that SDK, and we use Agile Scrum Development, which Aaron can talk about, and we actually release around quarterly. So we're kind of out of ship cycle of Visual Studio, so you'll see new versions of the VS SDK ongoing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of the things that you that were also announced were the ability to do what's called, I think it's isolated mode.
Yep.
So you could actually build your own Visual Studio, using Visual Studio Shell, build your own IDE, if you will. Do you guys want to talk about that real quick?
Sure, I can talk to that. Visual Studio Shell isolated. There's actually two modes that we have for Visual Studio Shell development. The first one is actually called integrated mode, and I'll explain that first. In the past, it was called Premier Partner Edition. And basically, what you can imagine is, you know how like with Windows Server 2008, they're shipping Windows Server Core, which is basically a headless operating system.
Sure.
You can think of the integrated mode as kind of the same thing. It's Visual Studio Core. That's all it is. There's no languages in it. There's no project systems when you go to the new project dialog. There's just nothing in it. But it's branded as Visual Studio. So when you're shipping an integrated mode, you're really sitting right on top of Visual Studio. And so if somebody else installs a higher edition of Visual Studio, it'll just all tie in and plug in together and become one product.
So it's like I have Visual Studio already, Visual Studio Standard, and I'm effectively adding in features. Is that
right? And you can create a product and distribute the integrated mode redist. And so somebody that doesn't even hasn't purchased Visual Studio will actually have, you know, Visual Studio plus just your package. They won't have C Sharp, they won't have VB, but they'll at least get what features you're providing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Isolated mode.
Yeah, isolated mode. So isolated mode is the really cool new thing. What that gives you is the ability to have your own what's called an app ID. So you can think of, like, in 2005 and 2008, we shipped all the Express products, so Visual Basic Express, C Sharp Express, etc. And they all kind of live independently. They're all branded differently. They all have different templates that show up inside of them. They're basically separate products.
Mm-hmm.
What the isolated mode gives you is the ability to create your own one of those. So you will sit on top of, you know, all the same windowing system, the toolbars, and everything. But you can brand it however you want. And there's no royalty fees that you have to pay to Microsoft to redistribute it. So you could create your own development tool, or it doesn't even have to be a development tool. It just as for any sort of application, if it makes sense that you want something kind of like what the environment Visual Studio provides, it's a really compelling option to consider.
Yeah, okay. So it's sort of like the infrastructure, if you will, and then you can build everything else.
Yeah.
You can customize the application to build whatever.
Right.
Things like language services, the project system, even the XML editor, it's
mm-hmm.
all built into the free shell. So if you wanted to, it could be some custom language. It doesn't even have to target the .NET framework. Hypothetically, a PowerShell editor or an F-sharp editor. Like, we have the Iron Python sample application in our VS SDK. So if you've heard of Iron Python, it's actually a sample application that is included in the SDK. Now, one of the things we did when we released the VS Shell a few months back is we basically had that application put inside the package around the VS Shell isolated mode.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can go to CodePlex and download this thing called Iron Python Studio. If you install that, if you don't have Visual Studio, or even if you do, it installs the isolated shell runtime. And that's kind of like a one-time thing. I mean, if you have multiple applications that are based on the isolated shell, you only install the shell one time. It does
sure.
require .NET Framework 3.5, so that may be required on the first install. And then it's treated like kind of a runtime engine, in a sense. So if you spark up an application, you'll get the Visual Studio IDE, but it actually says Iron Python Studio.
Sure,
and
sure.
you don't. When you say new project, you create a new Iron Python project. But the thing is, you don't have to have any version of Visual Studio installed. And with the isolated mode, if you have Visual Studio or you install Visual Studio, it'll be like side by side, independent. If you had built a Iron Python Studio version that's for integrated mode, you install it. You don't have Visual Studio. You get the same basic experience. You buy and install VS Standard or above later. That'll kind of snap together as integrated mode. So now all of a sudden you can say, I want to build a C-sharp, VB, or Iron Python project. It's one unified experience. So the scenario is a little more around integrated are, I want this to be a standalone shell, have capability, but I want it to be integrated with VS if VS is there, or standard or above.
Sure,
isolated
sure.
mode, again, we have a sample application out there called Storyboard Designer. It does not even target a developer. It's using our
what
DSL modeling tools. And DSL, domain-specific language, a simple way to visualize it is it looks kind of like Visio in the sense that it's objects and shapes that you diagram and link together. If you've seen the Class Designer, VSTS, or
mm-hmm.
that kind of, that's using the DSL engine. So the team that does DSL is now part of our team.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the components to build your own DSL-based modeling experience is inside the VS SDK, and it's free to build. So there's an interesting combination to build something around DSL, and then it's a visual modeler that might output code. It might, you're editing an XML file, you can generate metadata, you can update a database, generate HTML files, whatever. You can then deploy an isolated shell application with DSL modeling. You can create your own modeling tool. It might be for a vertical industry. It might be built around a framework of classes. It could target anything. So a couple of big things happened when we released Visual Studio 2008 last November. Not only did we release the shell as a free, license-free, royalty-free runtime for the first time, so that whole IDE is now a free platform to build on, we also changed the licensing, you know, the terms of use, so that you can now build and integrate within Visual Studio or build on our VS Shell app, you know, runtime that targets anything. You know,
mm-hmm.
it can compete with Microsoft.
Sure,
you
sure.
You know what I'm saying? So the door is open. Someone could build any kind of tools they want on integrate with VS or as a standalone VS Shell application. So one of the things that was created, one of the first applications, commercial apps with the shell, is called Ruby and Steel by Sapphire Software.
Mm-hmm.
So they took, you know, the Ruby on Rails stuff,
yep.
created a basically an editor, but they took all the color coding and IntelliSense and project management, all these features that are in Visual Studio, and quickly built up this Ruby and Steel. And I think it's about $49, you know, and they put it online. But essentially, it was easy for them, quick for them to create. But if you look at the checklist of features they offer as a editor, it's a lot like Visual Studio. I mean, you get all these cool things, but most of them they just got because Visual Studio offers it.
Sure.
And so we see a lot more of this coming, in a sense, where there's going to be these products or applications that are just leveraging VS. And again,
that
it's
are domain-specific, right.
Yeah. They post it on their site, and our runtimes are on our site, but you can actually build one MSI install that installs the whole thing, or you can try to treat it like, here's your VS Shell runtime, and here's your small application. Another example, of course, is the add-on for World of Warcraft.
Oh, add-on Studio, yeah.
Right, add-on Studio for World of Warcraft is the special name. It's on CodePlex. You're definitely familiar with it because you helped drive that project.
Yeah, yeah.
But, Mike's out working with the community members to build this tool that's on CodePlex that essentially it deploys with the VS Shell, and it's a development environment that edits the frame XML file type as well as the Lua scripting language with color coding IntelliSense.
Right.
And when you hit F5 and you build, it deploys to the World of Warcraft PC client, and it integrates these add-ons. So you're essentially using Visual Studio as a development environment for World of Warcraft add-on extensions.
Right. And,
it's free.
Yeah, so one of the great things there, as you mentioned, all these windows without having to recreate, plus it's the same experience. So if there's a huge audience of Visual Studio developers, so if I'm building Ruby on Steel or Add-on Studio or any of these tools, I know to go to Tool Options, to change the fonts. I know there's a property window, Solution Explorer. All those things come for free.
And I'll let Aaron talk in a little more detail. The steps to get started are, you have Visual Studio, standard or above. You download the free Visual Studio SDK. You build these packages. There's wizards, there's templates, there's samples and all that. And then there's some steps when you're ready to deploy with the shell. But the shell is more of a runtime. I mean, you can fully test on your machine. And you might use virtual PC or another desktop or a machine or whatever, and that's your kind of deployment. But really, the shell is around deployment. So the steps are pretty easy. I mean, stepwise. The deeper you go in, and there's certain areas of extending Visual Studio that get a little more complex, and we're constantly working to document things more, have better samples, and so on. But the step to go from a package to a shell, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I can even show it, actually. I've
got it. Sure.
It's like a wizard.
Bring up the screen. So what I've got here is I actually have already created a Visual Studio Shell stub, although I'll just show it here. You get a it shows up as a template when you install the Visual Studio SDK, and I've already built it once because it takes a minute or two to build, so just for time's sake here. I can just hit F5, and I put a switch here so it'll pause on the splash screen. But you can see this is just, it's a blank splash screen, so you can put whatever you want here. It's just a bitmap. And you get this little Power by Visual Studio overlay on top of it. And that's the only branding that we're putting in the whole thing. So you can rebrand this, put in your own Help About box, do whatever you want.
Sure.
So click OK just to get past that. All right, so this is actually, this app running in front here is actually my app. It's just called VS Shell Stub 1 now. But you'll see here, I mean, it looks and feels exactly like Visual Studio. You've got the toolbox, the Server Explorer, Solution Explorer, the Properties window. You even got things like, built-in XML editor. So you can imagine, I mean, just having a really good XML editor like is built into Visual Studio in some sort of tool that you're creating would just be, awesome. You get this all for free.
Awesome.
Ironically, someone could actually take the whole shell, add a schema, right, and call it the FooBar XML editor and distribute it, and essentially it's like a custom XML editor. And you can customize all the menu commands. You could hide things, you could hide the Server Explorer, you could hide a lot of the menu systems, and then, of course, add your own as well.
Sure, so let's talk about some of those extensions. So I see this is the out-of-the-box experience.
Yeah, this is the default.
But under the hood, there's a lot more. I mean, you got the language services, the project engine, right? So
yeah, let's talk about those. I've only done a little bit of Visual Studio extensibility, but this is with DTE objects.
Yep.
So what's extensibility and how does that work these days?
And it might be useful for you to kind of give that API picture. That's a tricky one.
Oh, okay. You guys could always draw on the whiteboard too.
I'm trying to think. Maybe it'd be better to start from the beginning then. So there's a, if we will draw on the whiteboard. All right, so there's this diagram that always shows up when we talk about Visual Studio extensibility. Um, So macros add into packages. Macros are the first level of what we'd like to think about with extensibility. Basically, it's built into the IDE. It's been built in for a long time, actually. So you very well may have seen them already. There's not a whole lot that's new here in 2008. This just basically gives you the ability to do just application automation of Visual Studio. It's,
sure.
It's very lightweight, very quick to get started. You pull up the macros editor and just go. Add-ins is the next level up. It's very similar in what you can do to macros. The difference being add-ins gives you a way to take something like a really complicated macro or set of macros and package them up and distribute them in a way that's easy for another person to install them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real big difference. Both of these things, you're pretty much just going to be limited to DTE. That stands for Design Time Environment, and it's a series of libraries you can reference. And
the coding for macros is you're doing a macro recorder or that script language, while add-ins is VB, C Sharp?
Right. So macros, actually, the only language you can do, at least in 2003 through 2008, is Visual Basic.
Okay.
Add-ins, you can do any .NET language.
Okay.
And that's mostly just because the macros editor only supports Visual Basic that we ship with the Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
So packages is the next level up, and typically this has been the realm of VSIP, like Ken was talking about. You know, industry partners pretty much only did this, and it was only for really deep integrations.
And it was also C++ in terms of the API.
It was all C++ COM-based. So if you didn't know C++ and COM, you had to ramp up on them very quickly if you wanted to do anything in the space. It's still good to know at least a little bit of COM once you get into the deeper things, but we've tried to wrap as much up into just generic .NET libraries as we can for now. Yeah, so packages, that's the next layer up. So then, just an eraser.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. So now let's talk about packages. Okay, so there's a couple different layers we got going on here. So at the base layer, we have the Visual Studio Core, and you could think of this as just the core. there's a layer on top of this of COM interfaces, and this is pretty much what we had until through Visual Studio 2003. If you wanted to do anything, you could create a COM component that's on top of it that talked to the IDE.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now what we did started doing late in the 2003 product cycle and then really in 2005 was we added another layer on top of here, which is the interop layer. So this is a bunch of interop binaries that let you call in from a .NET language and interface with Visual Studio.
Sure.
Okay, in 2005, we added a series of libraries called Manage Package Framework, which we commonly refer to as MPF. What these do is these were designed for .NET developers, so things are much more friendly. It's not you're constantly implementing these, you know, different interfaces, and you don't have to know what INKNOWN is, and, you know.
Yay.
It's more like you derive from a class and put some attributes on it and maybe override a method or two and go.
Okay.
So it's much simpler.
Now, so it's the equivalent sort of like the BCL, if you will, for building VS Core apps? Like
right.
it's a set of classes that effectively call into different parts of VS Core.
Right. And so we've got classes here that focus on, well, just first of all, hooking in, so packages in general. Tool windows, language services, working with menu routing and commands, a lot of the really common stuff that's going to be the same across packages.
Okay.
We've tried to put a lot of that in there. There are still a lot of areas, though, where you do need to use the interops directly. And
okay.
It's, in most cases, it's not really that bad. It's usually like you have a class and you're going to need to implement some interface on it. Now, because you have these interops, it works very much like .NET does in the IDE. You just, you know, put I derive from, you know, IVS event listener or something, and override a couple methods, and you're all good. yeah, that, I mean, that's pretty much the basic architecture of the way things are working.
Okay, so let's talk, let's drill into a little of the MPF stuff. You mentioned some of the tool windows and some of the other extensibility things. So let's say you mentioned language service and some of the things that you get for free.
Okay.
So what do I get, a lexical parser? I know there was the Babel, which was a sort of a sample implementation. Is that ship in the SDK, or what tools do you provide in the SDK, I should say, for everything?
Well, for language...
Let's start language.
Language services specifically, let's talk about. Okay, so there was this thing called Babel, which shipped for quite a while, and I think we still ship it in 2008, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And... it was. It sits down at this level, or right on top of the COM interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
It's all native C++. But what you could do is take, you know, the Lex and Yak, old, you know, Unix tools for generating lexers and parsers, and you could take the output from those and pretty easily hook it into Babel, which then knows how to talk to the language service interfaces in Visual Studio. So you could do things like colorization and IntelliSense,
mm-hmm.
And do it in a much more natural way, because you're doing that during your parse, because you call into the service from your lexer yak file. Native Babel, though, is kind of deprecated at this point. There's not a lot of active development on it.
Mm-hmm.
What we do ship is another piece called Manage Babel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that has a couple tools that we also ship with it. With Native Babel, we actually had said, oh, you've got to go out and find the tools on your own, because Microsoft didn't have the rights to redistribute some of the things.
Sure.
But with the Manage Babel, we actually ship a series of tools that were originally developed at Queensland University of Technology. And they're called MPPG and MPLex. And they're in the SDK. And what they do is they take a Lex and Yak language specification file. And when you run them through, you actually get C# at the end. And it knows how to talk to Manage Babel, which knows how to talk to Visual Studio. But the whole thing's in managed code, so it's much easier to work with.
So I have my language specification, how I do parsing, and I'm guessing I send that to Manage Babel, like, you know, my print hello world or whatever my example is, and walk us through, like, what actually goes through the chain to actually give me, say, IntelliSense for that parentheses on hello world. I guess somewhat high level, if you think that's crazy.
That's a pretty deep talk. I actually just gave a talk at Lang.net. It was hosted on Microsoft Campus about a month ago.
Okay.
It was on that. It goes a little bit deeper into the technical specifications.
Okay,
They just posted the videos online. So if you want more, I'll just talk about a really high level now, but if anybody out there is looking for more detailed info, go to that talk.
That's great to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on a really high level, what happens? What happens is Visual Studio knows what the language of the source file that's up is based on the file extension.
Mm-hmm.
To register with that. It calls to your language service, which you provide. It then will ask it to scan through the file and just provide very basic colorization on the tokens. When Visual Studio decides that it needs to do a more advanced operation that's going to take a little while, like IntelliSense or something, and it figures out that it's hit a what's called a trigger token in your language, which you have to specify, like a parenthesis. You have to declare that this is some sort of special character in my language.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a call to a method called parseSource, which will then go in and, you can have it do all sorts of things, basically, at that point. But it will call into your language service, you'll do the parse, and during your parse, you can call into Manage Babel or any other Visual Studio interface that you want to do things like pop up the IntelliSense window and whatnot. But your parser needs to figure out what to show there.
Sure, sure.
So that's really the hard part, and you have to know your language pretty well.
So then you pop up, let's do maybe if there was console.writeline or something. So, mm-hmm. And I do write, and I have the items there. How do I plug that in? Is it just like looking for a generic list of string tokens that I pass into Visual Studio to actually show it in the UI? Or do I need to implement a specific interface, or how does it actually work?
In Manage Babel, you actually, maybe I can bring it up, actually. I'll show you at least in the...
Get a little crazy here.
Yeah, we're getting pretty deep here. I'm sorry. Okay. So this is the Manage My C sample that ships that uses Manage Babel if you're interested in creating your own language services.
Okay. And this all ships in the SDK?
Yeah. So this is actually what you're going to want to do. Now, the Manage My C sample that we ship in the SDK doesn't actually demonstrate IntelliSense.
Okay.
But I can show you where you hook in if you want to do that.
Okay.
That's actually in this find completions method, which is in a resolver class, and this is where you're going to need to hook up your logic for having your parser provide a context object at different points when Visual Studio is parsing your file. Mm-hmm. So your parser can send back a context object, and it'll get called back on this then if the user does a dot there.
Okay,
and
cool.
And you return this new list of whatever, and you can see in this declaration, you provide a couple things. The glyph is, you know, the little icon that shows up and the name. So, yeah, this is the basic structure of it.
Awesome. Yeah. Very cool. So,
and don't forget the Iron Python sample that's in the SDK is like a complete all-in-one sample.
Yeah.
It has the language intel. I mean, it's a whole development environment, you know, tools, everything, and so that all the code is there in C#, and So
people
wants to
that
see
want
a full functioning end to end scenario around
right.
project system, language services, IDE tools, deployment, you know, the whole, you know, compiling everything.
Yeah,
that's great.
Thing to keep in mind with that with Iron Python is it's a little different in that it was actually put together before we had Managed Babel. So it has its own custom parser and goes directly against the language service interfaces that Managed Babel abstracts away from you a little bit.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
One thing to note is that we're on an, I would call it an aggressive path to have more content around a lot of this. We're going to have more white papers, more like walkthrough, deep dive walkthroughs on the samples, a lot of the ones we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's ongoing how do I videotype things online. And so over the next several months, there'll be a lot more information online and step-by-step guides
and
around a lot of this, include not just languages but other stuff too. So people can really say, I'm ready to start. I want to create this little FUBAR scripting language. I want to get started creating a simple IntelliSense color coding. How do I do it step-by-step? And so.
And what's the site?
MSDN.com/VSX.
VSX.
That's our
okay.
dev center for Visual Studio Extensibility. Our team blog, what I blog to is VSX team blog. It's blogs.msdn.com/VSX team. But you can find that on the dev center. You'll see Aaron's blog and other team members' blogs. So really, just msdn.com/VSX is like the home.
Okay.
It has everything there, content, you know, all that stuff. And our documentation for the SDK is online, even if you don't install it. So.
Okay, so other stuff that comes in the
Let's
SDK.
Bring up the SDK browser and just click through that sample window.
Sure.
That would be useful.
Yeah.
Just it's good for people to see that.
What actually comes.
When you install the SDK, you get this little, it's a client window with tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets you started. And you also, when you say new project type, there'll be additional things for creating a package or creating DSL tools, you know. So, you know, it's not just samples. The SDK does give you templates and wizards to create things from scratch that really help you.
Sure. So what are we looking at here?
Okay, so this is the what we call the Visual Studio SDK browser, and it's really the entry point for getting started with the SDK. If it's a great way to see what sort of samples we have. This is one of the things we kind of struggled with was, okay, we can spray all these samples down somewhere on disk, but they're not really that discoverable. So this is kind of our mechanism for somebody that has no idea where to start with the SDK or where to drill down into to really have a little more user-friendly way to...
And you guys are going to force this on the rest of Visual Studio, right?
Yeah. We'll see.
Not that we have any discoverability problems.
So, anyway, you can see here I've got the different samples sorted out into category groupings. So here's all the IDE samples, which are like the core integration scenarios. So, for example, and we've got a bunch of different languages listed here. I can filter by languages. So let's say I'm only interested in Visual Basic. So now I want IDE samples in Visual Basic. What do I want to do? Let's see.
Is there, say, like a tool window? Say somebody wants
okay.
to...
That's a common thing.
Implement their poor man's
like that
messenger
source code
or the source code outliner or any of these.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways you could go about that one specifically. We have in the new project templates, there's a Visual Studio package wizard, Mm-hmm. And Visual Basic is one of the languages you can use, and that will actually set you up with a package with the tool window. We also have a sample that shows a little more. It's meant to show more about the different things you can do with a tool window. Not so much being just a starter kit, which is really what the wizard gives you.
Okay.
So anyway, I'll open up the reference sample. You can see here a Visual Basic reference.tool window. So I just click open the sample in Visual Studio. Okay, and here we go. So I've got my tool window project. Now this is just a matter of hitting F5. Let's see the thing running.
And then while this is running, we briefly mentioned this thing called Experimental Hive. You want basically, in order, when you're developing something to extend Visual Studio, we don't want the experience to be, oh, you want to remove the file menu, and then you run it, and it's actually doing it to the Visual Studio instance that you're developing with. So we launched something called an Experimental Hive. It's like a little clone of your project set, you know, your environment settings. And it just, when you close it, it goes away. So it's like a little test bed in memory. Is that a good way to explain it? I mean, want to add something to that?
So basically what we end up doing is we clone the all the registry settings that you've got under HK local machine. We clone those to the current user and run in a current user context when you're running an Experimental Hive. So I guess I could...
And then you can...
Don't worry about diving down. I'll take your word for it.
You can launch that independently. So if you've actually compiled and tried some things out, then you can actually close the studio and just launch that Experimental Hive independently and then try out the one or more extensions that you have.
Now, the registry settings are things that Visual Studio is doing by calling the MPF or specific... APIs in the application, like a developer isn't writing those settings to the registry, or is it, I guess, both?
Well, if you're doing native development, you pretty much have to know what you need to put in the registry to properly register your package.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing managed development, most of that you get kind of, again, for free. You have to put certain attributes on your package class,
mm-hmm.
but we have a tool that runs as part of the build, and most of the time you wouldn't even need to know about it, because it'll just run with our build targets, called RegPackage.
Okay.
And that will, if you're just doing a normal build, it'll actually register your package in the Experimental Hive for you. It basically, you know, loads it up with system.reflection and looks at the different attributes, and it figures out, based on that, what needs to go into the registry. If you're then ready to create an installer, you can then use that tool to instead output a reg file or something else that you can take and put into a Windows installer or any other install tool that you're using.
Okay.
So anyway, I hit F5 on this Visual Basic tool window sample. You can see here another instance of Visual Studio comes up that I'm actually debugging right now. You'll notice here when you're running the Experimental Hive, we add on the title bar so you can tell.
Experimental Hive.
Yes, Experimental Hive. So that's what that means. And what that means is I can register as many features as I want here, and I won't screw up my main environment. So I'm not going to not be able to get my work done the next day or something.
And you can clear it out at any time at all.
Right, yeah. There's a shortcut on the...
when you install the SDK, you actually get your own program files folder, which has the SDK browser and a few other utilities.
Yeah, and there's a shortcut here in the start menu for reset the 2008 Experimental Hive.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay, so if I go under View Other Windows, oh, nice. Okay, so this one works. So this is the persistent tool window.
You guys are going to file a bug on that.
Yes, we'll file a bug on that immediately after this.
Since he's a developer on the SDK, he's working with different iterations of the SDK on his machine.
Yeah,
so we know exactly who to file the bug with.
This might be a slightly unstable version of it right here. So anyway, this is actually from the sample, this persistent tool window. This is just, it's just to show something. So this is just a list of all the tool windows that are running in the IDE.
Okay.
Can see here if I bring up, object browser. That shows up.
Cool.
So with the overall, integration, a lot of times there's different levels of extensibility, how deep you want to go, what events you hook up to. Plus, a lot of times there's different methods of getting to it. There's that DTE object. You might want to just write to the output window and do a quick thing. If you're trying to create something that integrates with multiple other products installed, they may have their own custom output windows or different custom versions of it. You may have to go out and get some references to check for that first, and then we have samples a lot of times for both, or you might find different techniques online. So a lot of times there's a simple, quick, and easy way to get something, and then if you're making a commercial product, it might be something you put a little more into it in terms of summarize a good way of talking about the different levels. I mean, just to get started, you could create just an add-in, and then it's a simple process to redistribute that. When you want to take a package, and now let's say you took that tool window and says, you know, this is something I want a lot of developers to check out and it would be useful, right? So now Aaron would have to go out for free and get a PLK, a package load key. It's like a little GUID kind of ID thing. It's free, and there's an historical reason why this is required back to the whole partner program. But you get this tool, this key, and then when someone else installs it, that doesn't have the VS SDK installed, then it will allow it to run. It's just a one-time quick step process. There's information online about how to get that key per package. So if you wanted to take that and put it on and list it on the visualstudiogallery.com site, maybe post it on the Code Gallery or CodePlex or his own site, and then have people download and use it. For packages that integrate tightly with VS, you need the PLK. And then for the shell, you need an SLK, the shell load key. There's little keys that you put in. You put the name of the thing in there.
So if I want to share an add-on, do I need a PLK?
No. The add-ins that are part of Visual Studio, there's a separate wizard for that. You could have VS Standard or above, and that wizard is there, and you just share add-ins, and that's a simple, easy way. But again, add-ins don't always integrate tightly within the environment.
Yeah,
they're more of, I just want to create a window and fire it off when somebody clicks here or whatever. You can access, some APIs that are useful in add-ins, but again, it's kind of a goofy analogy is an electric car today versus a regular car. An electric car might get you down the street to the grocery store, hop around, whatever, but if you need to get on the freeway and get to the airport or whatever, or go across town, electric car may not be the ideal thing. So
sure.
This is kind of they both exist, and they're both a little different in that regard. And we were seeing a momentum around the SDK because people are wanting to do more powerful things.
Yeah, absolutely.
No limits, and get and learn that. And we are growing a community around extensibility. There's a lot of MVPs there's a lot of developers popping up. They're saying, hey, I'm working on a book on it. I've got this blog with tons of stuff. I created some packages, and I'm sharing them. So we're just seeing this growing, vibrant community around extensibility. And the two big areas are people who extend Visual Studio by add-ins and packages, and the other who go to a place like visualstudiogallery.com, and they install the stuff, whether it's free or a commercial product. And you're extending Visual Studio just by installing new functionality. So we're really, with the SDK, the VS being very extensible, and the VS shell is a free runtime and all, then it's like a VS is becoming a platform. On top of things like Windows and .NET, it's actually, Visual Studio is a platform for developers and companies to build on.
Sure. So you got other stuff to show us?
Well, one of the things I could show, too, is, so I've got the Visual Studio shell that I had up before. So what if I wanted to actually go in and add a new tool window into this thing? Right?
Okay.
So my own custom application. So I'll walk through very quickly and show how pretty simple it is to add that. So I right-click the solution and say add new project. I select the Visual Studio Integration Package Wizard here.
And again, that is visible when you install the SDK.
Mm-hmm.
You would normally see that.
So let's go create, like we did before, just the Visual Basic tool window. So just call it my tool window. Check these for now.
Now I saw those were integration test projects. So you guys, if somebody has like VSTS, this would actually build a test project to do unit tests against it?
That's correct.
Awesome.
And the unit test project is what you traditionally think of as unit tests. They basically, they try to not have any kind of environment available. It just really, test this class, and test this specific method, and nothing else around it.
Sure.
The integration test project you get, it actually uses what's called a VSTS test host adapter. And what that means is normally you run your tests in the unit test context, which is like run with MS test and load up this test binary and that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
But this will actually add a new context and run your tests in that called the VSIDE context. So what that means is when you say run all the tests in this project, you'll actually see an instance of Visual Studio come up, and it'll run tests using the DT automation object model against your package.
Awesome.
And if you keep those things checked, I didn't for time because it takes a little longer.
Sure.
It will. You get a bunch of tests for the features that you selected just to start with as a test bed.
So, for example, doing that. Let's say I had added my own tool window or added something into like the build window or
right.
like my own menu item. I could use that integration test to test what happens when somebody clicks that.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. So it's like IDE automation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Very cool.
So, you know.
Now, is Visual Studio doing this or using this?
Visual Studio isn't using. I mean, we do tons of test automation in Visual Studio, of course, but I don't think that anybody's using this specific framework just because, you know, we've just added it into the SDK and there's so much existing internal automation stuff that we use. So.
Wow. Okay. Didn't know that existed, but very cool.
Things we may see more of is different Microsoft teams who take the SDK and build something and extend Visual Studio for their product or technology. This is starting to happen more and more. I mean, the XML editor was actually built with their SDK internally
mm-hmm.
by the data platform team. So that was one example. But more and more teams within Microsoft are looking at how do we extend Visual Studio for some project or technology that they're working on.
Okay, so you can see here I brought up this My Tool Window class that you get that's generated from the wizard.
Mm-hmm.
It inherits from this tool window pane class, which is part of the MPF. It does a lot of the wiring for you and the interfaces you need to implement to get a tool window. Basically, this thing is just a wrapper to host a control. So let's take a look at that. This is mycontrol.vb. And this is just your standard winforms.net control. It's just got a button on it with click me, and it'll show a message box when you click it. It's really,
now, could
really
I do
really
WPF?
Can you do WPF? Yes. And no.
Yes
so
and no.
The templates don't show you how to do WPF. If you want to do it, it's really easy because WPF provides a great interop layer between WPF and WinForms. And you can use the element host class in that, which basically will allow you to host WPF content inside of a container that's expecting a Win32 or WinForms control.
Okay.
So if you do that, we've tested it out. It works fine.
Okay.
But we don't have any templates for it right now.
Okay, good enough.
And that other talk we did, we were talking about the power commands,
mm-hmm.
power toy utility.
That's
that
using
has,
it?
Yeah, and that'll have code and you'll be able to see it.
So that's a working example. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, what if I want to see this running in my VS Shell stub? I can right-click the VS Shell stub, and I can say it depends on my VS package 1. Now, what this shell dependencies dialog will do is it actually will take the output from this VS package and register it appropriately
mm-hmm.
with my new VS shell instance. So that's all I had to do. And now if I hit F5, hopefully this all works. This is completely unscripted demo, so.
That's the kind we like to see?
Yeah, let's see if it works.
Developers debugging on the fly, come on. No pressure.
So it's registering the project actually will register with Visual Studio as well as my application in the experimental hive. So that's what it's doing right now.
And it's literally starting another instance of VS.
Yes.
Okay.
Silently in the background.
A lot of times you'll find that first time you do a step like this, it takes longer. As you're developing, you jump back. The second time you do it, it's faster. So again, when we're talking about the different types of areas, right? There are language and services. There's projects. There's areas where you can just hook into the build process, right? Where you know you're hitting a build, and for example, on the World of Warcraft add-on, the add-on studio for World of Warcraft, there is a step when you hit F5 where it actually takes the XML and Lua scripting files that you have and copies them and updates them in the add-on area on the client, mm-hmm. for World of Warcraft, so it's a one-step process. It's not like you build and then you have to go out to some other tool and copy the files.
Right.
Something happening there that was extending Visual Studio. And this could be good for team development or something you do on a regular basis for your own development methodology. And so it's not just about sharing stuff on visualstudio.outlier.com. What we're really seeing is more and more developers, teams, and you know enterprises, all that, from individuals to teams, to extend Visual Studio to customize their own experience to increase their productivity.
It's automating internal processes.
Right.
Yeah, well, very cool.
Yeah.
So did this...
Yeah, I finished. It wasn't that long.
Okay.
Finished right after Ken started talking. So. Anyway, so now I have my VS Shell Stub 1 app up again. I can go to View, Other Windows, and there we have my tool window. So this is the one I just added. It's in Visual Basic, and I get a nice giant click.
Beautiful.
It doesn't help you do great UI design. That's
yes,
up to you.
This
yes,
this is true. You will still have to hire UI designers.
Yes, exactly.
We don't give you any help with that.
Excellent. But that's awesome. That's
yeah,
great.
So it's we're trying to make it even, you know, with each release of the SDK, we're trying to make it more more simple and straightforward to add extensions to Visual Studio.
Now, a couple of random things that you hear feedback from folks is, I really want to skin the hell out of Visual Studio. Like, where do you see the limitations now, and where are you guys kind of taking the SDK going forward? Like, say if somebody wanted to, instead of the regular 16x16 icons, they wanted to add, like, the WPF ribbon, for
uh-huh.
example, and just kind of go crazy and skinning. Like, what's available today? What would you recommend today?
Okay.
And then what are the things that you guys care about in the future?
All right. So as far as skinning goes, today you pretty much have no options.
Okay.
There's basically nothing you can do. There's some, I guess, some third-party tools that kind of can do it, but they're, you know, not really supported.
Okay.
As far as future plans, I don't know what we can say. I can just say stay tuned.
Well, I would say that we're...
Something you're looking at.
The
yes.
two things, the main... Talk about roadmap. We're our... Like I said, we release the Visual Studio SDK on a regular basis in between different versions of Visual Studio, so you see it kind of quarterly. So later this year, you'll see new versions of the SDK that actually add what we call tools for tools. So it's not just a wizard only. There's going to be more tools that help you extend Visual Studio. We're going to make it so the bar is lower and lower to do the basic things when you extend Visual Studio. There'll always be those deep API calls for something really custom or specific, but we're going to keep enhancing that experience so that just more developers have success developing it. Now, on the next version of Visual Studio, VS10, or what we call Dev10, we are taking extensibility extremely, extremely serious, or it's a high priority. So the functionality of the next version of Visual Studio to extend will be higher than VS2008. Even though VS2008 is great, when you get into that UI functionality or real specific things, we're taking a good look at all of these areas, including the way the APIs are and everything, and just making it even better for extensibility. So it's like it's a path. You know, it's going to constantly improve in terms of how you extend Visual Studio and the functionality that exists. And the more that the developers start extending Visual Studio now, the more, as we cultivate this community, the more feedback that Microsoft will have to make sure the next version of Visual Studio and future SDKs are great, so that even more scenarios are out there, even more great things that are free and commercial on visualstudiogallery.com, or, you know, what's there is just even better, and what developers can do on their own, all that. So you'll just see a growing development community, and the roadmap is part of that, because this is just the beginning.
True.
In the sense that before, we just made the SDK kind of free and it was out there. Now we're actually doing a whole lot around, you know, educational content, building it, making it easier, and then, of course, enhancing Visual Studio itself ongoing so that they tie together. One thing to add is, you might have seen this. This is the Code Magazine does focus issues, and we had one done working with the Code Magazine folks at EPS Software where this whole issue was on VSX. Now, while we've got a bunch of printed copies sitting here, this whole magazine is online. The PDF is a download, and then every article is in HTML online as well.
So for getting started, that's where you would point
people?
It's
a good getting started. We have a lot of other stuff online, but it's in terms of like a magazine, you just read through it, it's got stuff on intro to the SDK, stuff on add-ins, stuff on the shell, how the XML editor was built, you know, some other community projects, like kind of case study things. So you just go to msdn.com/VSX and you'll find a link to this whole magazine. So again, there's more and more stuff going on around content, educational material, and improving the samples, doing walkthroughs, more white papers, more presentations at events, more stuff where we record that and put it online. We'll see more screencasts.
Awesome.
All that.
Awesome. So. Now, if people want to give you feedback for VS10, whether, hey, here's how I want you guys to do skinning, or, you know, add WPF support, where do they actually send? Is it Product Feedback Center, or where should they send you feedback?
So I would say things on the SDK, any kind of feedback, a simple way is just go to the VSX team blog and mm-hmm. then select contact. And
okay.
The email comes right to me. You can still, if you go to Aaron's blog and you see something that he's talking about specific around languages, you can do the same there. My email is klevy@microsoft.com, klevy@microsoft.com, so people can email me directly if they want.
Okay.
So that's a good starting point. Of course, we'll disclose more and more about, you know, the next SDKs that are coming and future versions of Visual Studio and so forth in time. But we welcome feedback always at any time.
Cool. Awesome. All good. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.